Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves, blessed to do it on Wednesday. It's the Ringside Sports with a Punch podcast live from Las Vegas, hosted by my good friend Mel Velasquez, yours truly playing co-host, running aboard Mark Mancini out here in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. Show goes by quick, so catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet down, put the podium in its place and hand off the mics without slapping them. Mel, first of all, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, boy, we got a great guest tonight.
Yeah, you know, Mark, first of all, we do have a great guest. We're swerving off a little bit off sports, but we're on an extremely important topic. And I love the time period. But you'll find more about that in a few minutes. Mark, I'm glad I'm not close enough so you can walk up and slap me. I doubt if you would, but we would have fun with it. That was ridiculous. Let me make a comment about that. Sports and entertainment are getting too enthralled with politics and antics, and it's taking us away from the entertainment value. We got to get back to just, you know, sports is where we escape, not where we go to see violence or see a guy like Kyrie sitting or, you know, stuff like that, all this stuff that's going on. So, you know, let's get back to the entertainment value. I mean, these are the best in the world, and that's what we go to see. We don't care about the rest of the stuff. Anyway, you can get a hold of me by going to Mel Velasquez at gmail.com, or you can go to me and get to me and write at theintangiblesbook@gmail.com. That's probably the better site. If you want to find my book, go to Mel Velasquez, The Intangibles. And so that's the two ways. You can find my book or you can just write to me, you know, theintangiblesbook@gmail.com. I'm going to do my brief 3-minute spiel. It's going to be a little different than usual. I was going to talk about vision, but I think I'm going to save that for another show. I'm going to talk about survival. And it's important today. It's important with what we have. You know, you got to survive before you can save. You know, people in Yvette's profession, she's a nurse. I was a clinical therapist at one time. You know, where even you, Mark, you've got a helping spirit, you know, by what you're doing with the media. And we like to save the world, but you also have to survive. You have to take care of your needs. There was a psychologist by the name of Abraham Maslow in the 40s, came out with a famous hierarchy called the hierarchy of needs. You know, and at the top was self-actualization and then self-esteem and then socialization. But the bottom two rungs were safety and the bottom one was survival. You've got to take care of your basic needs. You got to have food. You got to have water. You got to have shelter, you know, before you could start worrying about these other things. So, you know, reason I'm bringing that up, we're in a state right now where we're trying to continue to save the world when we need to take care of ourselves. We need to take care of our country. We need to take care of who we are. We need to maintain our identity. I think our identity is based in faith, and it's family, it's freedom, and free will. You know, I think we have to maintain those pillars to keep the table standing so that we can eat off it and feed off it. You know, we can't let that be lost and taken away. So anyway, I'm gonna talk about a quick story, and then we're gonna get on to Yvette because I'm really anxious to hear, you know, her whole, you know, epic. She's got quite a story, and she's written some incredible stories. But back in the late 1800s, my great grandfather came before that. He came before Texas was even a state. And I always say he went to bed saying, buenas noches. And he woke up the next morning saying, top of the morning to you, Lassie, you know, I guess, or Laddie, either one, because they just, he didn't move. He didn't swim a river. He didn't climb a wall. He didn't do anything. He went to bed. It was Mexico. Woke up. It was Texas. It was the United States. So, you know, that's how, you know, my family got here. So we go back seven generations or whatever. But his son, who was my grandfather, he was an interesting guy. First of all, he had 13 kids. One of them was my father. And he started, he inherited a small ranch, you know, digging from his father. And they lived off of a small ranch like a lot of people did back in those days in the West and in that area in that time. And he also was a bootlegger. He was known to have the best whiskey and make the best beer in Central Texas. So good that a guy by the name of Frank James used to come down and bring his brother's gang with him. I was told Jesse even came before he passed away, but Frank used to come quite a bit. And the way I knew about this is my brother showed me a picture one time of my grandfather who died before I was born. But he showed me a picture of him, and he was wearing this like dude cowboy hat, and it was slanted. And he said, "Do you know why he's wearing that?" I said, "No, why he's wearing it like that?" I said, "No." He said, "Because Pa told me that Frank James gave him that hat and told him that's how we wear it." So that's how he wore it. So we go back with some history and some ancestry and some, you know, times during that time period must have been fantastic. But in order to survive with 13 kids, he learned how to bootleg. And so you learn, you take your talents, whatever you can, and you make things work for you. Well, where we're at today, I think we're getting back to that point where survival and safety are going to become a little bit more important until we start swinging back around and bringing back to more prosperous, more stable times. So that's it. My, you know, survival. Can you save the world? Yes, but you got to take care of yourself first and take care of your family and take care of your beliefs and your identity first. So that's my spiel for tonight, Mark. Let me turn it back to you, and let's see where we can go with it.
Well said, and boy, our guest tonight, man, I'll tell you, I get excited. She's done quite a few shows in this Mancini Media, including the WWDB Philadelphia show, Liberty Bell Smack, with Marianne Costello and Sal Tartaglia, and she's back here in Las Vegas with us. So it's the author, Yvette Blake, and I guess the first thing, I don't even know where to start. That's why I'm going to give it over to you, Mel, and I just want to thank Yvette for coming in here and taking time. I mean, she's a fitness trainer, she's equestrian, photographer, an author, strength training, comedy, cycling, photography. I don't know, where do you want to go with it?
I think you added some extras in there, but okay. whatever.
And she is a nurse. She is a nurse. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well. Yeah, all she right. is a nurse, so, and I'll tell you, with the way, you know, the world is going today, between having security as a forefront in today's world, that's one thing that's never going to go away. And I think the other thing that'll never go away, Mel, is, a registered nurse. And Yvette,
absolutely.
We are so blessed to have you in here tonight. The first thing I want to ask is, I'm not a big needle guy, so I cringe when that needle starts going in me. What got you in? And I know we're going to get into the books and all that stuff, but let's start off with the being a registered nurse. What got you in that field? Was it, you know, playing with dolls at an early age and growing up, or who got you into that field? Because I think that is a blessing, just saving people and reassuring people when they go into hospitals, everything's going to be okay when you get out of here.
So I actually didn't start out thinking I would be a nurse. When I was growing up, I thought I would be a teacher. And a lot of that came because I was the oldest of the seven kids. I taught my brothers and sisters how to read and write at a very young age, and I enjoyed it and thought that that would be what I would do for a living. And so it wasn't until I was 12 or 13 that I received some inspiration that I should consider going into nursing. And it was very shocking to me to think about, because to me that was scary, and I was a shy girl, and it was hard for me to imagine, like you said, giving shots to people, because that sounded pretty scary to me. Like, I don't love shots either. And so it took a lot of courage on my part to go to college and apply for the nursing program. And it took me my first year of college to do all the prerequisites in order to qualify to even get into the nursing program. And I was accepted. It was kind of a dream come true, an impossible miracle, because it was such a difficult program to get into. They only accepted 60 students a year. It was a tough program. They took the top of the classes to get in there. So you had to have good grades, but you also had to have everything else that it took to be that kind of a person. And I think the biggest difference for me getting into the nursing program was my AP Anat and Phys teacher, Dr. Louder, and he was amazing. I was his lab assistant for that first year of my college that I took. It was two semesters with him, and was his lab assistant, and he thought the world of me, and he must have seen something there and put in a good word for me with the nursing program, and I got in, and it wasn't easy. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, and it was scary because I was shy, and it was a big stretch for me, but I think my Heavenly Father knew that I was blessed with gifts beyond what I recognized in myself, so I think that is a lot of also part of my writing.
I was going to ask you, Yvette. So you've got the gift of working with people, working as a nurse, which is not that easy. How did you pivot, and when did you pivot into writing?
Well, it started at a very young age. I've always been writing and enjoyed creating stories, and started probably around 8 or 9 years old, I was writing stories, and I received a toy typewriter when I was a kid and loved to write stories, and I would illustrate them for fun. And even when it wasn't required in school, I would write stories, post-apocalyptic, pioneer stories, mystery stories. I love to read. I love to read, and I think when you read a lot, your mind, your imagination grows, and then you think of your own imaginative stories. And so I started at a young age. I took a lot of AP English and literature. In college, I only had one English class and would have loved to have taken more, except that I had too many of my prerequisites and nursing classes that I just didn't have time. So I always have journaled. I've always loved to write stories, and it wasn't until I got older and my kids were grown that I started to put down some of my short stories, and somebody read a short story of mine and said, you really ought to put that in novel form. And so I thought,
okay,
why not? How fun. Why not? I don't know what I'm doing, but why not?
Okay, so how did you get the basis for the stories you've written about, and how did you get into that time period? And I heard you mention pioneer stories and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What is the basis, for the content of your stories?
Yeah, I loved growing up and watching Little House on the Prairie. That was my favorite after-school show. Still watch it every year I go through all the series. I find it very uplifting. There's always a happy resolution, it seems like. I read all of Laura Ingalls Wilder's books growing up and continue to read them, even the supplemental things that come out about her. And so I've always loved that time period. Also, like you, Mel, my grandfather, his father settled, homesteaded here in Idaho, built himself a cabin and started planting wheat in this area. And so I kind of have some, like you, some heritage roots here in the farming community. And so I think it's a romantic time period because I feel like it gets back to the basics. The root of happiness is family and connecting with your family and people around you and communities, tight communities, and watching out for each other. Like you said, faith, family, freedom, and your free will, that's essentially a dream. That's an escape, a perfect reality for me, I feel like,
but
to live in.
Tell us a little more detail, though, about your books and the content and the characters and what did you get into,
Yeah, so because I love that time period, it was easy for me to imagine a story about someone, a girl, that I could relate to. She may be me or like me, but a better version of me. Imagine, things happening in her life and what would she do and looking for true love and how she found it. So it's a romance. It's a simple, clean romance. It's set in the time period. I just wanted to, it was a time in my life, I guess, when I was experiencing a lot of stress. The topic of rape was coming up quite a bit at my work. Mm-hmm. I was a postpartum nurse, and we had a SANE nurse. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a nurse that does the examination of the victim. They come in, and they have a special room that they take them to, and they go. Mm-hmm. And so they would pass our department in. And it had come up a couple of different times with coworkers and with close people to me, and it was on my mind, I guess. And so the story kind of starts out with that tragic occurrence happening to this young woman and how she overcomes her feeling of being devastated from losing not only her family but also her virtue, and then how she finds true love despite everything else that seems to be working against her. And Cassie's Miracle, I titled it that way because it's not just a miracle that she survived what she went through in the initial attack, but she has miracles happen, blessings that come along, just like in our lives. That lets her know that God is aware of her and loves her. So it's not just one miracle, really. It's a lot of miracles. And it's the miracle of love, either miracle of love with family and with a spouse, friendship. And so she encounters her aunt and uncle take her in after she's lost her family, and they love her as their own, which was a great replacement for what she had lost. Then she comes across a mentor that loves her like a friend, who encourages her and she confides in. There's just so many little miracles along the way through the book that help her heal and overcome the tragedy that she's been through. And then, of course, the miracle of love true love, and she finds someone who makes her feel happy and loved and whole again, and not broken and not ruined, I guess.
You know, Yvette.
It was a way for me to work through some of my turmoil that I was experiencing. So.
Right. You know, when you talk about Little House on the Prairie, and you talk about, we kind of grew up with that, you know, Michael Landon was something. Mm-hmm. I think we lost him at a short time here on Earth, but somewhere along the line, he's up there in heaven dancing and doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked at Michael Landon, he was almost like a man's man. He had time to plow the fields. He had time to take care of his kids. He had time to take care of his wife. You don't see that today as much because you got a couple people working just to survive these days, inflation and everything. But, you know, when you looked at, you know, the Little House on the Prairie and it played a big part with your book and everything, what kind of put you up there with that thing where Michael Landon? Because I know with the Westerns, we've talked about it before, Sam Elliott. I'm a big Western guy, too, Kevin Costner and Yellowstone. There's just something about these guys that they're so sure of themselves and they've got everything handled and they've got ice in the veins and they can do anything. What's your thought with these kind of guys?
Well, I think everybody wants a hero. It is nice to know that somebody's there for you and got your back and knows what to do and can handle anything. And I know Michael Landon individual, a real person, was not like Pa Charles Ingalls in his real life. He had flaws. We all have flaws. We all have weaknesses and things that we struggle with. If you read his biography, he was not a perfect person, but he portrayed a very good man. And I think that's one thing when we talked about entertainment and especially books and shows, we watch them because we want to escape and we want to see the scenario work out in the perfect way. I write because I can imagine myself as Cassie, but I'm not her. I am more flawed, more imperfect. And she has time to think about what she says because I think about it and I make her say it. But you know, I think we all want that hero to come along and know what to do to save us and know what to say that makes everything feel better. And, yeah, we idolize them, and I think that's okay. We need good examples. Our society needs strong examples of what men
absolutely
and women should be like.
Exactly. You know, because the half hour goes so fast, I want to ask you a couple questions about your book and what you've put out. What are the big messages that that's coming across in your writings?
Mostly I want people to feel uplifted and encouraged and given hope that even though things are really tough and you're going through a really hard time, it's not going to always be like that, and you deserve to be happy, and you deserve to find joy again, and you will. And you just need to have faith and hope that God will make things work out for your benefit. And it's a Christian-based, clean romance, and that is what I portray is. Even though she has gone through some horrific trials, which most of us in our lives can't escape, we get put in terrible situations and you survive and you can move on. You don't have to be defined by your tragedy, you don't have to be the victim forever. And that's one thing that the mentor in the book talks to Cassie about is you are okay to move on and be happy. You do not have to be this victim your whole life. That doesn't define you. You're the survivor. And you can survive and be happy and have a new beginning and move on from this. And that's one thing when I finished writing the book, started to come up in the news and I was seeing it in media. these children coming forward that had been, their mothers had decided to give birth to them after rape, and these children were coming forward and saying, thank you for keeping me and not aborting me, because I have a happy life. I love my life, and I am grateful that my mother didn't decide to abort me, even after a terrible, horrific act, you know, act was upon her. I am thankful that I am here. And I thought, wow, that she, you know, eventually does give birth to a child in the book, and it becomes a blessing. And so even after tragedy, you can have blessings even from that. Maybe you learn something that you never would have learned before. Maybe you're a stronger person because of it, and you can help somebody else. You don't know.
Well,
your path is going to take you places you never imagined.
Right. Well, I've got one more question, and then I want you to tell us a little bit about, you know, how to get a hold of you and how to find, you know, your works and that. But how do you relate, because a lot of what you're saying took place in the late 1800s, which you're writing about, not saying. A lot of stuff that you're writing is in the late 1800s, you know, carrying on maybe to the early 1900s. But how does that relate to today? Because there's a lot of things going on today that I think are relevant to what you're writing about.
I feel like our struggle on this earth is universal. We are all trying to do the best we can and be the best people that we can, make a difference in this world. And I feel like nothing really changes. Yes, we have technology now and our world seems a little more crazy, but we all are still searching for love and connection with people, meaningful connections, and feeling a part of something, feeling like we belong. And I think that's what people are struggling with, is they don't know where they belong. The family unity needs to pull together again, and I think that would help our children be stronger and not be so swayed by the things they're encountering in the world. That's one thing I think it would be nice to get back to.
I think we still have it. We just can't lose any more ground. I think we still have strong family unity. The media might not portray that, but we do. But we can't lose any more ground. We can't. We can't go the other direction and lose our identity, especially with our families.
Yeah, and it's beneficial, I think, to learn about how it was back then, so we can kind of try to keep that, try and keep what our ancestors had and not lose it any further. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. Good point. Well, Mark, we're coming up on the
clock. Wow, yeah, we've come to the end here. And Yvette, just such a blessing to have you on. We got to get you back in here again and across the way. I mean, there's just so much to talk about. And 30 minutes goes by quick, but how can people get a hold of you?
Most find me on Facebook. I have a big following on Facebook. It's Yvette Blake, author. And you can follow me there. That is where I announce the progress that I'm making with the book and it's getting published, and when it will be released and when it will be available. So, and along the way, I share lots of beautiful pictures and history just to keep us interested as we're waiting patiently for this process to take place. But that's probably the best place. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, and I don't frequent those places as much as I'm on Facebook. So that's kind of my place lately. So
yeah. Well, I'll tell
say,
you,
she's follow
a great,
me there.
Yeah. She's a great lady and everything. And man, oh man, God sent us an angel in you. Unfortunately, if I'm getting a shot from you, I'm going to be turning the other side. So don't hold that against me.
I'm pretty good at it. I've been told that I can start an IV, not too painful, so that's a good thing.
Okay, I'll take my chances. Mel, how can people get a hold of you, my friend?
Real quick, just go to the Intangibles book at gmail.com. Kick me out a message. I'll respond to you. I want to say super quick, next week we've got Pete Turkovich, the only man in history to have a Hoosiers Hysteria championship ring as a player and a coach. Then he's going to come on the following week because he was a starting guard with UCLA in Johnny Wooden's last game. And he's going to talk about finishing up his career with Johnny Wooden, with Coach John Wooden. That's it for me.
Wow.
Thank you.
I'll tell you, man, you break it down and we're so excited. For Yvette Blake, Mel Velasquez, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to, powered now by Mancini Media. Have a blessed night. Thank you guys very much for tuning in, too, as well. See you next week, same time, same channel.